The meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy will come to order. It is now 3:04 p.m. Tuesday, March 22, 2011. It is day 64. We're here in the Ramona Barnes Committee Room of the Alaska Capitol, room 124. Members present to my right here are Representative Peterson, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Pruitt, myself, Co-Chair Foster. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please do turn off your phones or silent those. Actually, if we could ask you to turn those off, I think that interferes with the recording system. Today we're here to hear three resolutions. HGR 20, which is the roadless rule in Chugach and Tongass hydroelectric projects by Representative Johansson. HGR 23, hydroelectric power renewable energy by House Energy. HCR 9, which is the State Energy Production Working Group by House Energy. Please let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Tuck, and he's got a new haircut. And just to let the folks know how we'll be moving forward here, we're going to allow the presenter to make their presentation, and then we'll have committee discussion, public testimony, and then we'll take amendments. So with that, here to speak about his resolution, HGR 20, version A, is Representative Kyle Johansson. And Kyle, if you'd please identify yourself and proceed with your.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kyle Johansson, representative for House District 1, Ketchikan, Saxman, Kaufman Cove, Thorn Bay, Hollis, basically the east coast of Prince of Wales Island. And HGR 20 is before this committee today. Initially, the speaker had indicated that this resolution would go simply to the Resources Committee, and I specifically asked that it come in front of this committee because I'd like to try and kill two birds with one stone. One is the specific resolution about the roadless area and its effect on interconnecting energy, specifically in Southeast hydroelectric projects, to grids that need the energy. On a larger scale, I have concerns statewide about energy assets and how to connect those to the different grids and the myriad of land ownership issues that may come into play. For example, with the large hydros that we're talking about, you need to get that energy to the grid, and these issues, as the two members of energy that we talked about last year on the committee when I sat on the committee, at some point, these issues may come into play, so I really want to raise awareness of that challenge that may sneak up on you, where different landowners may have different conditions to allow interties to cross their land. So, to speak specifically to the resolution, Mr. Chairman, if I might go through it quickly, basically, in the Tongass National Forest and the Chugach, specifically, again, to the Tongass, if we go through the whereases, 57% of the acreage in the Tongass National Forest, about 17 million acres, 57% is defined as roadless. An additional 35% is defined as wilderness. The Secretary's Memorandum of 2010 reserves the right of the Secretary solely to decide whether or not a road can progress or not in the Tongass or the Chugach National Forest. One person has the ability to say no to any road whatsoever. And that really does impact projects. And as an example, before I go on, we had, some of you are familiar with the Swan-Tai Intertie, which was a 57-mile connection between two large dams that were partially funded by the state to electrify Southeast Alaska, part of the old four-dam pool projects. And what happened as a part of history back in the 90s, we had selected a route between Ketchikan and near Wrangell, which was the least expensive, and it provided road access. The cost for construction and long-term operation and maintenance was basically set. So you have X for cost with a road, that was litigated back east, and different tools were used in the federal system to basically stop that project, and which we ended up having to do was to select a new route with no road access, and all of the construction had to be done by helicopter. All of the maintenance and operation are done by helicopter. I'm not sure the last time you chartered a helicopter, but if you can get it off the ground for less than $500 an hour, you have a friend in the industry. So the cost went up exponentially for construction, and the long-term out costs for this project also rose. And so overall, we're paying that much more for these projects and their interconnections, the interties. So that's what really got me thinking about the interties and the challenges that we may face in the long-term cost for these things. And, of course, with the roadless rule, one person deciding yes or no on a road has an incredible amount of power over many of these projects in the Tongass and in the Chugach. Following down on page 2 in the whereas is on line 6, 14 out of 15 hydro projects in the Tongass and the Chugach are subject to protection of this inventoried roadless rule under Rule 36. And some of the testifiers will speak in much more detail and expertise on what this these projects, if there are questions, or what this really means. And then following that, of course, if the secretary decides that maybe a road in this project or a partial road to the project is not in the best interest, then that causes challenges with the FERC process, which is a very long for hydro, a very long and detailed process. From start to finish, we've been told by the FERC and through experience in my district and in Southeast that it's a 10-year process from day one when you walk in through the door until you get something finalized and permitted and okayed by the FERC. Now, this is part of the area where there's some gray area that I'm trying to clear up by putting this resolution into the process. Part of the goal that I want to accomplish with this is right now, for example, my community, the city of Ketchikan, has a project, the Whitman Lake Dam. It's about a it's a project that we got funding for last year in the budget, and it was vetoed by the governor, and of course we're trying to stick it back in there again this year. But that is permitted, has all of its paperwork from the FERC, and it's unclear, we can't get an answer out of the state or out of the federal government as to what the effect of this roadless rule has on a project that's already been permitted. You would assume that it would be okay. You would assume that we would be fine, but we don't know yet. So hopefully by putting this resolution through the system, perking some ears up between today and the time it gets passed out of the Senate, we will have on the record some sort of indication as to how these projects will be treated, as well as projects that haven't even started yet. We're, of course, assuming that they will be fully covered by this rule. But we're really trying to flesh out how this affects projects that are already permitted or ones that are already in the permitting process. So the exercise of introducing this and having it go through the system is, again, part of the process that I'm trying to accomplish to get some answers on questions like that, Mr. Chairman. Again, big picture, the president has declared that 25% as a goal of electrical generation should be by renewable energy. Now, certain hydro projects are not classified federally as renewable, believe it or not. Apparently they haven't studied the water cycle, as we all did in junior high, but nonetheless, that goal, at least in Alaska, I think we recognize hydro as being renewable. Our state goal is 50%, which was passed in the energy policy that both Representative Tuck and Peterson and I worked on in this committee last year. So we're trying to help the country and the state reach their goals, 25% nationally, 50% state. Now, part of the problem is if the president comes out and says we want to get to 25% by whatever date, his departments, the Interior Department or the Forest Service, et cetera, through the roadless rule and other mechanisms, effectively can oppose publicly or quietly within the red tape world that we are all familiar with, slow down the president's own goal of getting to 25%. And we've seen that with the timber industry in Southeast, how, you know, the president could come out, Bush came out after Clinton and said, you know, we want to do this, but the folks who have rolls of red tape actually kind of can thwart that. So we would like the president and his own people who work for him to be pulling in the same direction. Basically, in a nutshell, that's it. It's not a very necessarily complicated resolution. And again, by this going through the system, I'd like to flesh out some answers that, frankly, we're kind of unclear on at this point. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I think we have some professional folks online that are much more knowledgeable about the details than I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Johansson. For the record, please, Bob Lynn, Representative Bob Lynn is joined us. And also, I believe, Tom Lenhart, the Assistant Attorney General's Office, is also online for questions. Or is here in the audience. Thank you. So with that, are there any questions of the committee? Representative Tuck.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johansson, you mentioned the 25% that is the goal of the president's also. Would you like to have that included in some of your whereases, or did I miss it? I'm sorry. I see that we've got the 50% the governor's goal.
Mr. Chairman, it's actually scribbled into my notes, I don't believe it is actually included in the resolution. So if that's something that the committee would feel comfortable with, we could do that. Or this does go to resources next, and I'm certainly willing to carry that with a little more investigation as to the wording under the resources committee. But obviously it's up to the chair and the committee.
Thank you, other Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johansson, thanks for your presentation. I applaud your efforts to do whatever we can to defend the jobs, investment, and the economic opportunities, dwindling though they are in the Tonga, so thanks for bringing this forward. On your second whereas on page 2 speaks of 14 to 15 hydroelectric projects in the Tonga. I confess I'm not aware that there are that many pending. Can you give some brief rundown of, are they gained in one area, or just give me some more information about those 15?
As far as the Chugach, I'm not familiar with going through all of the different projects that are located within the Chugach. And within Southeast, I can say that, for example, we have the Whitman Lake project that I had talked about briefly. We have possible projects in Metlakatla. I see representation from Metlakatla behind me. I figured he'd be here because he's always on the ball. But they have one hydro project that they can expand, and they also have another one that they're looking at. I believe they're going back and working on FERC paperwork. Sitka on Baranoff Island has Blue Lake and Tackett's. There are many, many different sites potentially in Southeast for hydro expansion. I mean, this is our. They call it the Saudi Arabia of hydro in Southeast, and I like to, you know, I kind of like to look at history of Alaska, and I've seen quotes from all the way back to I think it was Roosevelt or Truman or one of the two came through years ago and got off and looked around and said, "Why don't you guys build dams here?" And that, you know, 100 years ago, it was that obvious, and Kennedy came through when he was a senator, John Kennedy, and said the same thing. You know, you guys got to build as much hydro as you can. This place is amazing. And these hydros are high alpine lake hydros. They're not the traditional thought process of Washington where you throw a dam across the Columbia River. These are high lake. They don't affect salmon. These are lake tap mostly, and these details again can be fleshed out by the professional testifiers, but they're not your traditional hydro.
Slight translation problem, I think, with this, it was damn the rain.
They may have.
Good. Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions of the committee? Seeing none, we're going to move over to public testimony. And we do have a number of people that would like to testify, so if maybe we could keep your comments to about 3 minutes. First, here in the room, we have Shelley Wright, Executive Director of the Southeast Conference. Shelley, if you would please state your name for the record and affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm Shelley Wright. I'm the Executive Director for Southeast Conference. I'm speaking here today on behalf of the people of Southeast Alaska. I would like to start off, you do have written comment in your packets there that I provided for Representative Johansson, and I do have some additional comments to that written comment. I would like to start my testimony today by quoting a proclamation that was delivered by President Roosevelt, the great conservationist, and I quote, "And now, first and foremost, you can never forget for a moment what the object of our forest policy. That is not to preserve the forests because they are beautiful, though that is good in itself, not because they are refugees for wild creatures or wilderness, though that too is good in itself. But the primary object of our forest policy is the land policy of the United States, is making of prosperous homes. It is the part of the traditional policy of homemaking in our country. Every other consideration comes secondary. You yourselves have got to keep this practical object before your minds to remember that a forest which contributes nothing to the wealth, progress, or safety of our country is of no interest to the government and should be of little interest to the forester. Your attention must be directed to the preservation of the forest, not an end in itself, but as a means of preserving and increasing the prosperity of the nation." Not only has the Ninth Circuit Courts put a padlock on our communities and their progress, the Forest Service is now developing a proposed new planning rule for our nation's forests. I sat through the presentation yesterday. The priorities of the Forest Service is conservation of the trees, the plants, the animals, the water. When asked about the social and economic issues and the science within the forest, what the importance that was of the Forest Service, their comment was, "We have little or no influence over that." The Forest Service owns 98% of our land. That is scary. We have got to take some action here to get our forests back. I'll read just a little portion of our my written testimony. In the past 10 years, Southeast Conference, in partnership with many other agencies and organizations, have put an extensive amount of effort into the development of affordable, self-sustaining, renewable, green energy projects in our region. And it is fairly obvious that the federal government, controlling such vast amounts of the region and the energy resources within, and that access is critical to this issue. It's equally obvious that during these past few years, the forest was adequately protected during development of energy resources without the roadless enforcement. We have managed to develop several major hydro projects that are providing affordable, renewable, green energy to a small portion of our people. Unfortunately, we still have entire communities paying up to 90 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity. Our small businesses are the hardest hit, and as you know, has quite a ripple effect in these communities. Lack of access to land and the paralyzing permitting process of the federal government are killing our communities. People are not able to heat their homes and turn on their lights, much less start or maintain a business. The financial obligation to heat schools or community buildings is crippling in these communities. Jobs are at a premium, and there is no good news in sight. I will just say that there are several other projects that Representative Johansson didn't mention. One is the Angoon Project, Thayer Lake, also the Cape Petersburg Project. Several portions of that transmission line is in roadless area at this point, and it's just critical that we get our Forest Service on board with the social and economic value they do, the part they do play in the Tongass. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Shelley Wright? Seeing none, we appreciate your testimony, Shelley. Going online here, we have in Sitka, Gary White. Gary, are you there?
I am.
Yes, please state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Gary White. I'm the Executive Director of the Sitka Economic Development Association. just want to thank the committee for this opportunity to speak on this. We are in support of this resolution. We actively have a FERC permit out there right now, working on expanding our hydro capacity to Blue Lake Dam. And I have Chris Bruton in the room with me, and he'll testify later. I'll let him talk to the specifics of that project. But we are already having this road, this rule designation is already hurting our process or hurting our project. And as it continues, it's going to hurt economic development in our community. We right now, as a community, are at capacity for the amount of electricity that can be processed with our hydroelectric dams. It's inhibiting growth. It's inhibiting our fish processing plants. It's inhibiting new projects that are coming online to process the fish waste. And it's a complete killer to the overall quality of life for all these people that live in Sitka. And the roadless rule is going to be very detrimental to our future projects of constructing more hydroelectric dams to support the community and to support economic development. And I'll just stop there with my comments.
Thank you so much, Gary. And are there any questions for Gary? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. White, can you detail a little more how this policy is affecting your expansion of the Blue Lake hydro project?
Sure, I can do that. I would like you to ask Chris Bruton. He's the electric utility director here, and he's more in depth with it. But I could fill it in. I could fill you in the answers, or you could ask him later. What would you prefer?
Oh, if you, sir, right now could give me just a brief outline of what the choke point is.
Sure. Basically, there's an existing road to our Blue Lake facility. It's been there since the 50s. The way that our project is going now is we're going to raise the height of our Blue Lake Dam by 83 feet. In doing so, we're going to raise the level of the lake up, and it's going to encumber U.S. Forest Service property, which is, of course, all of our property. For us to remove the timber to bring it out of the lake before the lake levels rise is in violation of the roadless rule. We actually received a letter from FERC, the lead organization in our permitting for our hydro dams, on March 7th, the day that this thing was turned around, which is suggesting that we need to go to the Secretary of Agriculture to get permission to harvest those trees. If we do not harvest the trees and leave them standing, and we raise the lake of the height of the dam, we're going to have turbidity issues with our water. That water is our is our municipal water source. It's our source for hydroelectric, and it's also the source of water for our water bottling plant. So we'd have to put in more infrastructure to fix that turbidity issue, which could be a filtration plant, which could cost anywhere in the means of millions of dollars. That's an added cost to our project here. It seems fairly ridiculous to me that we already have a road there to leave all that good timber standing there instead of being able to harvest it and bring it out. So hopefully that answered some of your questions.
That does. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you. Any other questions for Gary White? Hearing none, Christopher Bruton, are you there?
I sure am, Mr. Chairman.
If you could state your name for the record as well as your affiliation, please.
Sure. Christopher Bruton, Utility Director for the City and Borough of Sitka Electric Department.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Time is of the essence on this project. We've been working on this FERC license application for a capacity amendment. We're going to raise the dam 83 feet, build a new power, a new intake structure, and add three new turbines. We'll increase our system capacity by 27%. Like Gary stated, we're out of capacity. In fact, we'll be running diesel this week when we start processing fish for the herring fishery. But we submit our license application to FERC in November. We met with them in December, and they pointed out that despite the fact that Blue Lake has been an existing project for 50 years, there's still a roadless rule impact to the project. So we met with the Forest Service, and we sent in a request for the secretary to rule on this in September of last year. I met with Undersecretary Harris Sherman of the USDA about 3 weeks ago on our legislative visit to D.C. They have had the package since February 2nd, and their response was, you know, we've only had it for 30 days. We'll get to it whenever we can. I received a letter March 7th that says, it was from FERC, it said, resolution of this issue is important to our processing and analysis of your license. So please keep us updated on any response from the Forest Service, and in particular from the Washington, D.C. office. So we are bumping up against that time frame. In October of this year, we had a bond proposition for our voters. It was approved by over 90% approval here in town. We issued the bonds in November. The problem is those bonds have a three-year requirement to begin construction. We have a very short window for construction to minimize our diesel operations. We anticipate FERC taking a year to get our license done once they start work on it. So we are simply bumping up against a serious time frame about meeting our bond covenants and our bond requirements, and we can't afford to wait on the Forest Service to do this issue. It's a critical issue for our community, and we are extremely frustrated with the whole ordeal, if you will. I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any questions.
Are there any questions for Christopher, Representative Sadler?
Thank you very much. Mr. Rudin, you said you're frustrated. What has your experience been with the Forest Service's ability to respond quickly when time demands it? What's been your experience so far with the Forest Service in that regard?
I would say that it's been very poor. We have some local folks. I don't want to name folks in particular, but they've been very helpful and helped us trying to steward this information into the Washington, D.C. office. The problem is we're not privy to what's happening internally in the Forest Service and how fast they're pushing this, how much of a priority they consider it, or any other thing like that. All we can do is submit the paperwork, the Forest Service request, and then sit back and hope we get a response. FERC, as you're well aware, Forest Service has 4E conditions for any FERC hydro license application. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you get too ugly with them and push hard, you know, you may get pushed back on that. So I'm a little bit leery about throwing rocks at them at this point. But this is a critical issue. This is a $100 million project for our community, and every day we waste is more money our ratepayers are going to end up paying for this.
Further questions for Mr. Bruton? Seeing none, we appreciate your testimony. Thank you. Okay, Hat Simmons in Cordova, are you still there?
I'm here, Representative Foster. My name is Hap Simmons. I'm the chairman of the board of Cordova Electric Co-op, and I'm here just to show my support for House Joint Resolution number 20. We have a project at Snyder Falls Creek that we're investigating right now, which is on Forest Service property, and it will have, as previous testimony, it will have a major effect on the FERC licensing process. So I just wanted to add my testimony to those people that have already spoken. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any members here wish to ask a question to Mr. Simmons? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Simmons, for your testimony. Timothy Rooney, are you still online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tim Rooney, the borough manager for the city and borough of Wrangell, also Southeast Conference second vice president and a voting alternate board member for SEPA, and would just like to echo the concerns of those others that have testified this afternoon. In short, this is a critical issue for all the communities in Southeast. Wrangell is a fortunate community where we have affordable electric rates, but we are one of the few in Southeast, and the ability to construct these transmission lines and interties between hydro projects is vital to all of our all of the communities in Southeast Alaska's survival, and not to mention the ability to maintain those lines other than by way of helicopter. So again, I would like to speak in support of House Joint Resolution number 20.
Thank you, Mr. Rooney. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Marilyn Leland, are you still online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House Joint Resolution 20. My name is Marilyn Leland, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Power Association. APA is the statewide trade association that represents the electric utilities that supply power to about more than 500,000 Alaskans from Barrow to southwestern Alaska, through the interior and south central, and down the Inside Passage. Alaska Power Association strongly supports HJR 20, and we appreciate the efforts that you're putting into having the Alaska State Legislature go on record as opposing the federal administration's unreasonable efforts regarding implementation of the roadless rural regulation for the Tongass and Chugach National Forests. Alaska is blessed with an abundance of hydro resources from its lakes and streams that can be built with minimal environmental impact. Most new hydro development in Alaska replaces costly, finite, and less environmentally benign fossil generation fuels, specifically diesel, coal, and natural gas. Special use permits necessary for federal approval of hydro projects within roadless rural designated areas of national forests must be individually signed by the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. In addition to roadless rural designation permits, national forest land use permits, must be amended to accommodate hydro projects located along designated backcountry areas of a national forest. These federal actions can add a year or more to the hydro project approval process at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, seriously jeopardizing the three-year time frame within which applicants are bound to perfect their FERC permits. Time is of the essence in gaining approval for FERC permits. We believe the roadless rule is an unnecessary and burdensome impediment in the process. So again, Alaska Power Association strongly recommends that the committee move HJR 20 and that the legislature approve the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leland. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you. Lastly, on the off-nets, we have Charles Freeman. Are you still there, Charles?
Excuse me, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Please state your name and affiliation, please.
Yes, my name is Charles Freeman. I prefer Charlie, but that's okay. At the present moment, I am chairman of the board of the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, the agency which has ownership of both Tai'i and Swan Lake, Ketchikan and Petersburg Wrangell, and the Intertie. I first of all want to thank you for the time. Quite frankly, I haven't heard anybody I disagree with, so I'm going to keep this even shorter than the chairman wants it to. I would like to mention that, as Representative Johansson mentioned, this was helicopter built and helicopter maintained. Right at the moment, whether or not we can install helipads along that line to do the maintenance is an open question under the roadless rule. Now, this is really cute, right? I would like to offer SEPA's help anywhere along the line in opposing or modifying or killing this roadless rule. And as far as the rest of my testimony, I will say this. It is, as far as the roadless rule is concerned, myself personally and everybody on the SEPA board that I know of, we're against it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Are there any questions? Seeing none. Let's go ahead and move on to amendments. And if you could refer to page 2, line 22, you'll note in the resolution here that the goal of achieving 50% of the state's energy from renewable sources, that's ascribed to the governor. And I believe that the goal was set in place by the legislature in House Bill 306, which was actually generated by this committee.
Point of order, let me go ahead and move it. I move that we I object for discussion.
Amendment 1. Thank you. All right, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. That was actually generated by this committee. And so I'd like to entertain a technical amendment, which we have before us, and that would be to delete the governor's goal of generating and then inserting the words policy of the state as stated in Section 1, Chapter 82, SLA 2010, to generate. And so that has been moved. Are there any objections?
I move my objection.
Objection for the purpose of discussion. Any questions? I think this is a technical amendment, seeing no objections, what's the objection?
Just objective for discussion. I rule my objection.
Thank you. Okay. And are there any further objections? Seeing none, amendment number 1 passes. Are there any other amendments? Seeing none, is there any further discussion on the bill?
Real quick, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Yeah, I think it's really important that that we do get the president's intent of being 25% as this resolution moves forward. So I just wanted to throw that in here.
Thank you. Are you willing to put forth a conceptual amendment to that effect?
I can. I think that the sponsor of the bill said that he can go ahead and add it to going into the next committee. If he prefers, we can do a conceptual amendment here just to help let everybody know that we support that amendment as it leaves here.
Mm-hmm. Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Kyle Johansson, representing District 1. As far as I'm concerned, it's up to the chairman, whatever his prerogative is. Either way, we'll get it in there before it hits the floor. I think it's an important point, and whatever is the will of the chairman.
Okay. I think that that's it's not a substantive amendment, and so I think that would be fine to allow that. So did you move that?
Sure. I'll move conceptual amendment number 2.
I'll object for the purpose of discussion. Is there any further discussion? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe in reading some of the other material that was provided with this resolution. The president's goal was 25% renewable energy by 2025. So I would imagine that we would want to state that in the new clause that we're adding as well.
Okay. Representative Sadler?
Also, to the amendment, actually, being as there's some question as to what the federal government defines as renewable or alternative, it might be nice to make some to make sure and put a fine point in that to make sure it does cover hydroelectric energy. So we can box them in some.
Okay.
We have a resolution to do that. That we'll be hearing later on.
Not sure if we're starting to get into it. Representative Johansson, do you have comments on that? I think if we start to get a little more here, we may need to come back to that. But do you have a preference on that?
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Tuck's conceptual amendment would be easily incorporated on page 2, line 25, by the drafter. I think it's fairly simple to fold that in. I believe the issue of whether renewables are how they're defined by the feds is a little bit of a larger issue. We could certainly hold the bill up for a couple days and figure out another whereas, or I'm very open to working on language to have the resources folks look at when it goes to the resources committee. But again, it's at the will of the chairman and the committee.
Okay. So we do have conceptual amendment number 2. Let's see, I'll go ahead and Representative Tuck.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to state, I think this is a good statement that he has on his talking points. The Obama administration has set a goal of having 25% of the energy generated in the United States come from renewable green resources by 2025. I think having that inserted on page 2, line 25 would be appropriate.
I think that's simple enough. Further discussion? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. Are there further objections? Seeing none, amendment number 2 passes. Are there further amendments? Seeing none, we will see a cert. Where are we at here in terms of?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass House Joint Resolution 20, version A, with amendments and individual recommendations out of committee. And attach the fiscal note, even though it's zero.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Let's see here. I think go ahead and put in okay. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, HJR 20 moves out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, for your support.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to HGR 23 here. Yeah, let's take a at ease here. Energy Committee will come back to order. And now we have HGR 23 by the House Special Committee on Energy. And it urges the U.S. Congress to classify hydroelectric power as a renewable and alternative energy source. Here to outline the measure is Dirk Kraft, committee aide to Representative Lance Pruitt. Mr. Kraft, if you would please identify yourself for the record and tell us about the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff to Representative Lance Pruitt, also staff to this House Special Committee on Energy. I'm here to present HJR 23, urging the United States Congress to classify hydroelectric power as a renewable and alternative energy source. The U.S. has long used targeted tax credit programs to incentivize investment and innovation in the energy sector. This is true for fossil and renewable resources alike, and the investment and production tax credits for renewable energy have been highly successful. According to the National Hydropower Association, tens of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars in private investment across industries, not to mention gigawatts of affordable, reliable, and renewable power, have been driven by smart tax policies. Hydroelectric has extraordinary potential in Alaska to displace diesel-generated power with little to no environmental impact. However, hydropower receives only one half the credit available to other renewable energy sources. Equalizing the tax credit for hydropower will help Alaskans in their efforts to displace costly non-renewable generation of power. To date, the state has almost 50 hydropower projects that produce about 24% of Alaska's electricity needs. They range in sizes from the 126-megawatt Bradley Lake project to the 7-kilowatt Walsh Creek project. Currently, there are 32 additional hydropower projects in southeast Alaska alone that are either under construction or on the drawing boards. Statewide, there are another 200 areas that have been identified as promising sites for lake traps, run-of-river, pump storage, and even new hydroelectric reservoirs. In your bill packets, you should have a copy of a bill introduced by Senator Murkowski last week titled the Hydropower Renewable Energy Development Act of 2011. This act seeks to incentivize the further production of hydropower resource through federal programs and tax treatment by classifying hydroelectric power as a renewable source of energy. And I'll be happy to take any questions you have on this resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Kraft. Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Sadler.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Dirk, for presenting. Mm-hmm. On page 2, the fourth whereas down speaks of some federal laws and federal renewable and alternative energy programs don't classify. Could you expand on that a little bit to let us know what characterizes those programs? What kinds of programs are they?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sadler, I don't know specifically what program, what federal laws they're talking about. That all I know is that Senator Murkowski's bill addresses it specifically, what incentives those are. And I mentioned the production tax credit incentives, and that is what we're getting at through this resolution and as well as Senator Murkowski's resolution or bill in Congress right now. But specifically, no, I don't know which laws that would be involved.
That's good. That gets me there. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Further questions? Seeing no questions, let's go to the off-net. We do have one person here. Hap Simmons, are you there, Hap?
I'm here. Thank you, Representative Foster, Representative Pruitt. Appreciate the chance to testify. One of the questions that was just asked as far as federal laws dealing with hydro as a renewable, mainly financing is the big problem, in that cooperatives in the state of Alaska are not able to get federal financing as green energy or renewable projects with hydropower. I started about 15 years ago working with the delegation through the Alaska Power Association and through the National Rural Electric Co-op Association to rectify the situation of hydro not being a renewable resource. And I'm very, very happy to see Senator Murkowski's bill that came out last week, and hopefully as a standalone bill, we'll be able to move through Congress and rectify this situation. So I'm very pleased to see the committee put forth House Joint Resolution 23, and I want you to know that it's very much appreciated by the electric industry here in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. Are there any questions? Seeing none, let's move over to, unless there is further public testimony, I don't believe there is. Seeing none, are there any amendments of committee members? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry I did not get the amendment drafted, but I wanted to discuss it because I wasn't sure if this would be the total will of the committee. So I'd like to speak on it and just go ahead and move amendment number one, conceptual amendment number one.
Okay, and I'll object for the purpose of discussion.
Okay, and what I would like to do conceptually is, you know, one of the problems that we have, you know, Alaska is unique in its hydro resources. That's different from Washington State, Oregon, or other places. And one of the concerns that we were talking at the Energy Council was, how in the world can we get hydro plants reclassified as renewable resources without just making Alaska the exception? And one of the things that we talked about was perhaps having language where, as long as there's no economic competition for the water resource, through municipalities, through agricultural, through whatever it happens to be. And I'm not saying that that's the solution. I think it's I think it is a possible solution, but I wanted to talk over it with a little bit with the rest of the committee to see if that would work, or if do we have to refine the language a little bit better. But basically, as coming up with a with language that would help all hydro projects in the United States, but still address some of the concerns that some communities may have with hydro, which we don't have those same concerns here in Alaska. If that makes any sense.
Questions, Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you elaborate? I'm not quite sure what you're saying. What's the proposed language you would use?
The proposed language is, as long as, okay, I would propose that right after the, right in the be it resolved, page 2, line 17, after alternative energy resource, putting a comma and saying, as long as there is no economic competition for the water resource, comma, so that the state can participate in federal programs.
Representative Sadler?
Thank you. I would be a little hesitant of trying to condition the the single resolution clause of this resolution. That raises other questions of the test of applicability. What was language? As long as there was no other...
No other economic competition for the water resource.
I got concerns that it would take a definition that's pretty broad and might tend to negate the impact of this. I appreciate trying to broaden this to everything, but I don't quite see how that gets us there. I might just not be seeing it.
And I'm open for suggestions too, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments? Co-Chair Pruitt?
The only concern I have really is obviously we're trying to do this to make sure that we're in line with our federal delegation, help them out. And I going through Senator Murkowski's bill that she put through, I think we might be, she doesn't have anything in there that would relate to that, and I'd want to make sure that we're kind of lockstep with her. That would be my only concern, is making sure that we're just kind of almost right walking parallel with what she says, and not putting wording that might be a little bit different than what she does have or what she might not have in there, just so that there's no conversation later, someone saying, well, the Alaska State Legislature says X different than what she put through. So that would be my only concern with that.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just prior to coming to this Energy Committee meeting today, I was conferring with Senator Mark Begich up in the Speaker's office, and he mentioned that specific definition is one that that the U.S. Senate Energy Committee is hoping to include in language of their one of their upcoming energy bills. And so I believe it would, if we could figure out a way to include that in here, it would, I think it would work out really well that we were using the same definition that the federal, the Senate Energy Committee in Washington was using.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sadler? Yes, Eddies. Back to order, and Representative Tuck, if you could further clarify.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I again apologize that I didn't get this amendment done sooner. I know I discussed it a little bit, but basically, working on language to where we can put a condition on a hydro because of the concerns of hydro with the rest of the nation that Alaska doesn't share, because Alaska is unique with some of our hydro projects, to put down a condition that helps Alaska and may help other communities throughout the nation without and still being able to address the concerns that other communities may have. And that is to make in the language that was brought up was, as long as there is no economic competition for the water resource, but there might be some better language that we can construe by working together.
Are there any other questions, comments? Okay, with that, I think we'll go ahead and hold HJR 23 over. There are no objections to that. Okay. We'll move on over to House Concurrent Resolution 9. And that's by the House Special Committee on Energy. It would establish a four-member legislative panel called the Alaska Working Group on Interstate Energy Production. Here to outline the measure is, again, Dirk Kraft, committee aide to Representative Lance Pruitt. Mr. Kraft, please identify yourself for the record and tell us about the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Dirk Kraft, staff to Representative Lance Pruitt and staff to the House Special Committee on Energy. HCR 9 establishes in the Alaska State Legislature the Alaska Working Group on Interstate Energy Production. This legislation was crafted in response to legislation proposed by other states that produce energy and energy resources. Alaska, along with other states, continues to experience the negative consequences from delay or cancellation of economically viable energy-related projects because federal law and federal law enforcement too often overreach the federal government's constitutional authority to make and enforce laws. This working group will develop a proposal for an interlegislature agreement that will facilitate collaboration between the Alaska State Legislature and other state legislatures in efforts to influence federal energy-related law and policy and to discourage delay or cancellation of economically viable energy-related projects in the state and in other states. From this working group, we hope to see a more unified voice from the states most affected by the consequences of energy-related federal law. And if you look to page 2, line 2, the first further resolved, this states that this group will consist of 4 members, 2 appointed by the Senate President and 2 appointed by the Speaker of the House. Line 14, further resolved, states that this group can meet during and between regular sessions and is subject to approval by the Senate President or Speaker of the House, may travel for the purposes of this working group. Line 20, further resolved, terminates the working group on January 13th, 2013. Line 22, further resolved, sets a reporting deadline for the working group on January 17th, 2012, and allows for additional reports to be made as the group sees fit. And I'll be happy to take any questions you have on this resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Kraft. Are there any committee questions? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Just to clarify, Dirk, this is not aimed at interstate energy generation. You know, we're not going to work with Washington to generate power at the same time interstate. This is more like the Interstate Working Group on Energy Production, maybe better understood by.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Sadler, that's right. I know that this is a little unusual. It's not necessarily a task force, but it's something similar to what other states are doing. You'll look, I provided a resolution from Wyoming and Utah that's similar to what we're doing. One of the main differences is we're not doing it in statute. We're doing it through a concurrent resolution, and Ledge Legal thought that would be the most appropriate avenue to go for this sort of a working group.
And a little brief follow-up. And are Wyoming and Utah states that we would anticipate working together with in this working group?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sadler, that's correct. And I've heard from Wyoming that Texas is also on board, but I'm not certain about other states at this point.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Seeing no questions, I don't believe that we have any public testimony. Is that correct? No public testimony. Okay. And with that, I believe Representative Tuck has an amendment, amendment number 1. Representative Tuck, please move your amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move amendment number 1.
Object for purposes of discussion.
His objection, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've done some pretty good work in the last couple of years with the Energy Special, the Special Committee on Energy, and one of the things that I'm really proud of is that we had the energy policy for the state of Alaska that was done by a group of stakeholders, you know, from energy providers to energy groups to Anchorage Economic Development Corporation to members of this committee. And we came up with some good solutions. And one of the things that the presenter of the bill mentioned is that we want to have a unified voice. So what this amendment would do, Mr. Chair, is it would, on page 2, line 11, would increase the group of from 4 members to 6 members, and then it would be 3 senators and 3 representatives, and allowing some, and then on page 2, line, okay, sorry, caught that, and then also on page 2, line 12, increase it from 2 into 3 members. And then under the further resolved, at least one of the 3 senators appointed to the Alaska Working Group on Interstate Energy Production shall be a member of the largest minority caucus member. And then at least one of the 3 representatives appointed to the Alaska Working Group on Interstate Energy Production shall be a member of the largest minority caucus in the House. So that way there's minority members that would be able to be included. That way we continue having that unified voice from both bodies.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's a factor involved in this kind of thing. If this is a working group that's going to operate outside the state's boundaries, trying to work efficiently with other states, I think whatever proposals or ideas or information could be brought back and deal with our special committee, which does include members of minority and majority. So much as I appreciate the effort and inclusion, I think for compactness, efficiency, and cost, it might be best to keep it the size that's been proposed.
Thank you. Are there further questions?
Just a response.
Oh, Representative Tutnam.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And you, this is a resolution. This isn't a bill. You'll look at the other two resolutions, I mean, two bills, and they are actually a fiscal note attached to it. There's not going to be a fiscal note to this resolution, so there is no additional cost that's going to happen with this resolution. And there's no concern with cost on that one.
Mr. Chair.
Co-chair Pruitt.
I just want to make sure. There is actually a fiscal note on this, and it is related to travel. Make sure that everyone did get it. It is related to travel. It's about $5,000 per individual that will be there. I want to make sure we clarify on that.
I missed that.
So obviously there's that concern as well as one. I do go back to the other states also have four each, and don't really want to get too big on this because I think the idea is just to get a few people that working together with the other states and add a couple more people, and we might muddy our waters or might end up like an energy council discussion or something to it. But anyways, I understand that. I think we're trying to kind of mirror a little bit and work with all the other states that we've got. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sadler?
I just want to clarify, are you saying you don't want to intimidate those tiny states?
Okay. You
were there at Energy Council. We really dominated when we were there.
That's true. Further questions and comments? Okay, hearing none. Do you maintain your objection?
I do actually maintain the objection. I want to make sure that I don't want to dominate and make sure that we stay kind of in sequence with what the other states have that we're working with. So.
Okay.
Okay, and with that being said, Mr. Chair, I'll go ahead and remove the amendment since I missed the fiscal note. I apologize about that, and I don't want to increase the cost and to keep in line with the other states.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I appreciate that, yeah. Representative.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other amendments? Hearing none, the chair would welcome a motion to move HCR.
I remove my objection.
From the main
discussion earlier.
Okay, and the motion has been, or the objection has been removed. Is there a, see, and that was to the.
Because I had initially objected for purposes of the discussion, but I will make sure that I move. House concurrent resolution number 9, version B,
okay.
With fiscal note and with recommendations out of committee.
Thank you. Any further discussions? Objections, I should say. Hearing none, then CR 9 has moved from committee. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kraft. Well, I think that wraps up today's hearings. Our next meeting is Thursday, March 24, and at that time we'll be taking up a review of the state's natural gas potential in the Nenana River, Susitna River, Copper River Valley Basins, and the Bering Sea region, and also be reviewing Rural CAP's EnergyWise program to reduce energy costs. And as there is no further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 4?
Oh, 4:13.
Yeah. It's that glare. Thank you.